from the Twin Peaks Studios. Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
God, I love this so much. Tick, tick, boom! Appreciate you hanging out with us. In the Loop, Sports Radio 610. John Lopez, Figgy Fig, and myself, Reginald Atitula, having a fantastic, a swell Thursday here in H-Town. Hope you are doing the same. We'll get to around the NFL at 11:20 today, because we always make room for our guy, your guy, your favorite former Texan, that joins us every Thursday. His name is N.D. Kalu. N.D., what's happening, my man?
Man, I am good. I'm just sitting here watching Selling Sunset, and this must be the football version because Johnny Manziel's on it, and then what's his name? Deshaun Watson was on this
episode.
Oh wow!
I've seen some clips from that too.
and you know what's crazy? I hate to, and don't worry, I'm not going to give you my whole segment talking Selling Sunset.
No, it's all right.
But what's all jokes aside, I actually felt worse for Deshaun Watson when I saw him on the episode than I did for Johnny Manziel. And dude is coming off a historic signing for a contract. Like, it just goes to show, like, without your rep, it doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Johnny went through a lot, too, man.
And
And I still felt worse for with everything Johnny went through. Like, when I was watching the episodes, when I saw Johnny Manziel, I was like, huh, that was cool. I didn't know he was going to be on. But when I saw Deshaun Watson, you know, my first thoughts are rub and all the women that he, you know, supposedly violated. And I was like, man, that kind of sucks that's the first thought. It wasn't NFL quarterback. It wasn't $250 million guaranteed. It was him in the fetal position asking somebody to rub his bunghole. So it was just... Yeah, I just feel bad for his ref.
Oh, Andy Kalu joining us on In the Loop. All right, so let's get to you know, Wednesday and Thursday is when we really start looking forward more than anything.
Yes.
You know, on these weeks here on In the Loop, and we started the show, and I'm like, man, the whole concept and sort of prospects of this offense changed overnight with what Joe Mixon did. And I want to get your thoughts on that, because all this talk, and look, we're all drinking the Kool-Aid right now. Andy, you know that. I know you're a big Kool-Aid drinker too when things are going well, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yep.
But I'm thinking this offense, I'm not going to say historic, you know, because time will tell, but this offense, the possibilities just seem endless right now, man.
No, as far as the possibilities and the ceiling, you could say it's the highest it's ever been. And I'm not forgetting about the time when you had Arian Foster, you had Andre Johnson, you had arguably the best offensive line when you had Wade Smith, Chris Myers, Eric Winston, all those guys. You know, but they have to get it done. You know, it's only week one. Unfortunately, in the NFL, every week somebody goes down. What I like about this offense and the weapons is that you're going to have games where Joe Mixon may only have 50, 60 yards rushing, but that also is going to be the game where Tank Dell goes for over 100. Mm-hmm. But then you're also going to have games where even Diggs or Nico Collins, who had a great first game to this season, has only 50 yards receiving. Then Joe Mixon is going to, do what we saw with the first game. I just like the depth and weapons, not just at a certain position, but just all your playmakers. How many times have y'all even talked about Dalton Schultz this week? Like, there's going to be a game where, you know, he's the player of the week with 90 yards receiving and two touchdowns. So I just like all the different options that they have.
Andy, I kind of want to go to the defense in some ways, because the kind of some heroes that I don't know have gotten a ton of due, although I think people have tried to make sure to shout them out. The interior defensive linemen on this team, when you talk about Fatu Kasi and when you talk about Mario Edwards, for one, like, from your perspective, how impressive was that showing, making sure to handle the middle of that defense? And two, like, do you feel like the pressure that they were able to get is something that's sustainable, or does that feel like that was kind of more of a, all right, outstanding job, but that's not necessarily something we should expect week in, week out?
No, not at all. Great question. I don't think that's the outlier at all. Similar to what I said about the offense, you could say about the defense and a defensive perspective, where going into the game, you know, my initial thoughts, Danielle Hunter, Will Anderson, you know, what's their stat sheet going to look like? And they have two sacks, and the two sacks come from your interior guys. And next week, or this upcoming week when they play the Chicago Bears, who's going to be surprised if there's three sacks and it's split between Hunter and Jerry Hughes and Will Anderson? So you have so many options, and you have so many guys that can actually make plays. It was refreshing to see that the interior guys got the love and they got the stats. But more importantly than what we saw against the pass rush, I mean, they held Jonathan Taylor to less than 4 yards rushing, less than 50 total yards. And that was one of my question marks coming into the regular season, was the run defense. Mm-hmm. And to hold such a great running back to, you know, to those numbers, I thought that was even more impressive than your two guys getting the sack, your two inside guys, I should say, getting the sacks.
I'm interested as well on the defensive side, the two rookies, Kamari Lassiter and Kalen Bullock. And Reggie and I have been talking about this. Like, I'm a big fan of what Kamari Lassiter has done. At the same time, if it wasn't for Anthony Richardson missing a pass or two, these two guys might have been smoked, a time or two more. How would you evaluate the two rookies?
You know what? They look like rookies at points. And, there was a couple of players where I was like, whew, thank God they didn't connect because they would have been exposed. But the best of the best cornerbacks and safeties and defensive backs, they get exposed at points. I think this was a great learning experience for them, and they're going to continue to get better. Even with Bullock's interception, a buddy of mine, one of my former teammates, he played most of his career in the Colts. And, you know, he texts me like, oh, he got that because the receiver slipped. Well, he still made the play. Like, he still made what I thought was a heck of a catch and still was able to produce. And that's what you want. You want playmakers. You want guys who can produce when they have the opportunity. And that's what you have in these two guys.
We're talking to our guy, ND Kalu, right here in the Loop Sports Radio 610. And you've played some primetime games in your time in the league. This team, funny enough, seems like they haven't for quite a bit. Like, probably first primetime game since 2019. So Sunday night, like, is going to matter a good amount to the organization, but I think to a lot of these players, what really is the difference? Because, I mean, we could kind of hypothesize on it, but being on the field, I imagine you get a feel for it. What ends up being the real difference in a primetime game like this one that's coming up on Sunday?
You know what's interesting about that? And every player is different. So, you know, I can't speak for all 1,800 players. I actually didn't like primetime games. And we played in a lot when I was starting and during our heyday in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. I didn't like waiting all day because, like, you wake up anxious. You wake up like, man, let's get on the field and bust some heads. And then it's like, oh, let's wait 8 hours. You know, let's wait 8 hours and watch all these other games. But I will say this, Reggie, as soon as you step on the field, you step on the turf, the lights are on, and you know that you're literally the only football game in this great country. Like, that kind of just re-energizes you, and you really get hyped knowing that, man, if you like football and you want to watch some football, this is the only game in town. That there's some excitement there. And for the organization, for the ownership, for, you know, what the McNairs have done over the last couple of years, they get to display to the nation. So I think it means a lot. I don't know if I should say more, but it means a lot, not just to the players, but the people who've helped this brand, and they've helped, take the Houston Texans out of that laughingstock zone where people actually respect them now. I mean, they're, in my opinion, they're a top five team in the NFL right now. It's very early, but now you get to put that on display. But for players, I think some love it. Some love playing under the lights, knowing they're the only game in town. Other guys are like, man, I don't care if we play at 11 a.m., 11 p.m., just roll the ball out there and let's play.
Yeah. You mentioned the run game was one of the things you were keeping an eye on, maybe a concern. But I think a lot of that, obviously Joe Mixon, but Kenyon Green and Juice Scruggs, man. I mean, this is developing, obviously a lot of football left, but this is developing into quite the story on the interior offensive line. What did you see from those guys?
No, I love that. There's only a handful of running backs in the history of the NFL where you say, the offensive line doesn't matter. But anytime I see a good running back or with some good stats, it's because of those big dudes up front. And many times it's those guys in the middle. So for Kenyon Green, I love the mental toughness. You know, for him to go through, the injuries, the whispers of, you know, did they spend too high of a pick on bringing him in, and to play the way he played in the preseason and in the first game, it's exciting. And Joe Mixon will probably be the first one to tell you, hey, I don't have 130 yards if those guys up front aren't blocking for me and creating these huge holes for me to run through. But yeah, I think the most important part of the running game is not the running back. It's the guys up front. So that's a testament to those guys when you have a running back go for 130.
We're still talking to our guy, ND Kalu, former Texan, and one of our good friends here in the Loop. And ND, I think the strength-on-strength matchup that we're looking at here with the Texans and the Bears is Texans offense versus Bears defense. Particularly, it seems like there's been a lot of love given to that defensive secondary. I mean, what excites you about this matchup? What are you looking for, and what will you be watching Sunday when it comes to that matchup?
That's a big one, but just how they're going to attack a rookie quarterback. You know, you don't want him, in my opinion, to get comfortable. Like, we've seen him on the collegiate level, which is an entirely different level than the NFL, but we've seen some special plays, and you don't want him to get that confidence early. I'm really looking forward to see how many different blitzes and how many ways and different ways they try to disguise the blitzes to make sure he doesn't get comfortable. If I'm a defensive coordinator, if I'm a head coach, and I'm playing a rookie quarterback, I don't care how great he is, he's going to have to prove to me that he could mentally handle the blitzes. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how they're going to attack him and how they're going to try to get in between his ears.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going to ask you about, because you mentioned this earlier as well. Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter, they got to be chomping at the bit with the expectations that we've had. Now, I'm not saying they played, you know, poorly. They did not. But that's got to be, you know, probably topic number one on the defensive side on the line of scrimmage, getting those two guys active, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, now when you talk about putting pressure on the quarterback with those two guys, that's just, hey, win your one-on-one matchups. But I'm also expecting, John, to see, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Jalen Petrie has the first sack of the day, you know, first sack of the night, because they put him in on a nickel blitz or they try to disguise something. But, no, guys like Will Anderson, Danielle Hunter, they're chomping at the bit every game. I don't care if it's Caleb Williams or Tom Brady. Like, those guys, they're so great. They just want to get after who's ever under center. But I'm really excited just to see what type of games. And who knows? D'Amico might say, I just think my front five is better than their front five. Let's just go at it, and we're not going to get too creative. But I've always been of the belief, and that's the Jim Johnson way of approaching the defensive scheme. When you have a young quarterback, you really attack him with the blitzes. And you know what? If he picks up three in a row, then you say, okay, let's get our defensive backs to backpedal instead of coming forward, because he's proven that he understands the different schemes out there.
With this Bears defense that's coming in, there's some names on here, some dudes that can really make do some damage. Montez Sweat coming off that left edge. Obviously, Jalen Johnson, Kevin Byard, Jaquan Brisker, all in that defensive secondary. Like, there's some names, but I do wonder, with the way that this Texans offense has played, is there a defense in the world or in the league right now that really gives you pause? Because I'm still feeling pretty positive, even knowing that this Bears defense has been very good.
I'll say, because no matter what team you're playing, it's the NFL. So there's going to be some names on every single team, except maybe Carolina. But I'm sure if you look close enough, you'll maybe find, this guy was good back in junior high. But when you look at the team, there's always going to be some names. But as far as a team that gives you pause, I'm still going to go with Pittsburgh. Like when I know they play Pittsburgh in the preseason. But, man, I saw T.J. Watt. I saw a couple of moves, and I was just like, okay, he's in rare form. And Pittsburgh, no matter how bad they may be as a team, they're always going to have that stout defense. They're always going to have that culture that, hey, we may be 500 as far as our record, but we're going to hit you in the mouth. So that would be one defense that, you know, not that I would pause, but I would really keep an eye to see how they're going to handle that.
Okay, so what I heard is that you're not worried about the Bears at all. That's what I did hear. I want to make that clear.
So what did stand out to you? Because another thing that I mentioned with these guys, I believe yesterday, is I feel like the Texans are the second, you know, again, just basing it on week one. You put the Chiefs in their own category. I think the Texans, I mean, the Ravens, who knows? You know, we know they're capable. We know what Lamar Jackson can do. Buffalo, it seems like it's going to have to be the Josh Allen show and go on down the line. I feel like the Texans, in terms of completeness after 1 week, have to be up there right behind the Chiefs.
For AFC or the whole league?
AFC, I'm sorry. Yes, AFC.
I can't disagree. I mean, I can't. And here's the thing. You have people who take this too serious and they forget it's a game. Oh, power rankings are stupid. No, they're not. They're fun. Like, they're fun to talk about. Every week they're going to change. And after week one, I mean, it's hard for me to put the Texans lower than three, in my opinion. So, like you said, Kansas City's number one. Even though Baltimore, man, Lamar, and I'm a Lamar fan, but there were some throws. I was like, good God. Yeah. Like, I don't care if you are a dual threat quarterback. Like, you have to make that throw. You have to make that play. So there's a little inconsistency there. Josh Allen, I think he's one of the more underrated players in the NFL, and I think he can carry a team. But it'll be hard for me to put a team outside of Kansas City above the Texans. And with Kansas City, it's just kind of like that Michael Jordan effect.
Yeah.
Even if they look bad, it's like, you got to beat them. You know, you got to beat them for you to leapfrog over them in the rankings. So now I'm with y'all. I mean, I don't know if both of y'all agreed, but top three AFC, I got to have the Texans there.
Yeah, we're both in agreement there. ND, before we let you go, and I'm going to do this thing again where I bring up the Nigerian-ness that we have on the air. you've done media in this space. I generally was thinking about this morning because Fatu Kasi, I was thinking about him and his play. How obligated do you end up feeling on pronouncing a name like in the fullness of its being? Because I was like, Folorun Shaw, is like, do I need to do that, or am I just going to lean into the Foley of it all?
You know what? That's a good question. I always felt like I had to do it because no one else would.
Yeah.
And here's the thing about Nigerian names. And both my parents, you know, born, raised in Nigeria before going to London University and University of Texas San Antonio. So they are Nigerian. There's some names, though, when I say, hey, how do I pronounce this? They'll scratch their head and be like, ooh. You know, like they'll, you know, they'll write it out and make sure I pronounce it. But the one that always kills me, Reggie, that I hate that the actual players never correct it, when people say Okafor and it's Okafor, where the R is pretty silent.
Yeah.
And then I actually had other radio hosts on other stations try to correct me when I said it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm like, what type of colonizing mind is that? That you're gonna tell me how to pronounce this name? Like, the R is silent, but I'm like, I can't blame them. I gotta blame the player for it. And Okafo is not even that hard of a name.
Yeah,
no,
but
yeah.
Like, if you could pronounce Mike Krzyzewski, like, figure out a way to pronounce Okafo, right? But to answer your question, I always felt like I owed it to the Nigerian community and just people in general to make sure I pronounce their entire name correctly.
I got that a lot with Adetokunbo, Giannis, because he has the Greek, all of that happening. People are like, no, that's not how you say it. I'm like, it is. Let me tell you. When it comes to Nigerians, that's absolutely how you say it. When it comes to Nigerians, there's none better than my guy, ND Kalu. We appreciate you joining us every Thursday, getting us right before game day.
I appreciate y'all. I look forward to speaking with y'all next
Thursday. Yes, sir. That's the man, man. I always enjoy having that conversation. I think I might be establishing a trend where I have to come up with some level of Nigerian-ness in question.
You better.
I don't know.
Well, on the name thing, I always like hit, you know, Spanish names. It depends on who I'm talking to.
Yes.
Like, if I'm talking to another Hispanic, I'll say Yuli Gurriel. If I'm talking to Figgy, I'll say Yuli Gurriel.
That sounds like code switching to me, brother.
Hey, man, sometimes you got to code switch.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just have it's a reality of life. So you will get the Folorun Shaw, Fatu Kasi. Yeah, you're going to get all that here in Loop Sports Radio 610. All right, man, we made sure to get our guy Andy on, but that means we still need to get back around to Around the NFL. So that's what we'll do next. Around the NFL, let's talk about what's happening, including getting you ready for Thursday Night Football, a real big matchup in the AFC. We'll do that next.
Let's go around the NFL in the Loop style.
Why are you smiling?
Because I love football.
Brought to you by Quick Assist. Here's John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
I'm going to tell you all about how much fun you're going to have this season.
On Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
All right, let's go around the NFL as we got some Thursday Night Football, the first one that we have actually on Amazon Prime, on Prime Video. Remember, we talked to Ryan Fitzpatrick to get us ready for that earlier in the week, and so excited to actually see that because not only is it Thursday Night Football, you get Al Michaels back in tow, Kirk Herbstreit, all that, but Bills Dolphins. These are a couple of AFC contenders, and more importantly, they're going to be on the Texans' schedule. And I know you have a question about that.
Yeah.
And I have an answer.
Yeah. Is it too early? Is it too early to start thinking through the goggles when you watch this? Because keep in mind, not only do you face both of these teams, I think the Bills in about 3 or 4 weeks, and then you're going to face the Dolphins later. Not only are you going to face them in the regular season, you stand a good chance of playing one of these or both of these teams in the postseason. Is it too soon to watch through those goggles, like Texans, how they line up, how they stack up, and you're going to have a good feel for it because you're actually playing them too.
It is not, in my estimation. It is. I think that's the way that you view this. Hey, man, the NFL sends out these schedules in damn near January, brother. Like it feels like it feels like they have this schedule forever. And part of that is, hey, man, you map out that schedule and you plan your your trips and all that. But you keep an eye on the teams that are going to run up against you, and the Bills and the Bills, mind you, are going to see when is that again? October 6th. So in just a few weeks, in what, 3-4 weeks?
Yeah.
Right, you're going to see them. And so, no, that's absolutely part of this, right? Especially because you don't want to be in a place where it's just the week of and you're like, oh, now let's crash and see if we can figure out, or just use 1 week to determine what's happening going in. You want to have a little bit of an understanding on what's happening with it. So, yeah, man, I absolutely think that it's something that is not too early to view it within that context. Some information to help you as you go into that. Devon Achane, apparently, he was dealing with the ankle sprain. There's optimism that he will indeed play in this game. So, I mean,
game time decision, they're saying?
Yes, game time decision. There's clearly a lot of running backs on the team, but having that speed, particularly with Devon Achane, like that track speed that he brings, it matters a good amount. However, Mostert, who we know is ruled out for this game with the chest injury, apparently he's not expected to go on the IR. So I guess they feel, you know, good enough about him that he will not, it will not be season ending, and it probably won't be long term injury. So those will be I guess that's good for the Dolphins in that regard. But Achane might play tonight, and I think that one makes the game more interesting to watch just as a viewer. But then two, probably is going to be something to watch as we continue to go forward.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I want to see what Josh Allen is going to look like. Keep in mind they were trailing in their first game, and. And he worked some magic, and also the Dolphins. I think both these teams have a certain amount of ceiling. It's a high ceiling, but they have a certain ceiling that we're going to see if the Texans, you know, have something that can exceed that. You know, I think the Texans are going to be better than these two teams. We'll get a look at them tonight.
Yeah, and so one of the things that I love watching is like the market derived team tiers. So basically, just how the markets are feeling about various teams, and this is put together. I always see it by a Computer Cowboy on Twitter. He does a good job kind of looking at some of the advanced stats of things. And according to the markets, the teams that are all on kind of that top line of teams in the league, Niners, Lions, Chiefs, Texans, Eagles, Dolphins. And in that order, mind you, when it comes to them. So, like, all the talk that we had yesterday about the idea of, like, where does the AFC, you know, the pecking order, Kansas City, the highest in the AFC, Texans immediately thereafter, and then after them, the Dolphins. I didn't even mention the Ravens were on that next line. The Bills were on that next line, right? The markets and the people that are watching seem to have a feeling that the Texans are second best in the AFC.
Yeah, and I think the Dolphins, I've said it multiple times, I like what they look like. I like this squad, and I think they're going to go a lot of places, but there still is that ceiling, and it starts with Tua Tagovailoa.
Another AFC team out there, the Bengals, clearly not getting a ton of love. I don't think anybody has really placed them all that highly, and they even went as far as losing in week one. And Chris Canty actually has some strong feelings about the Bengals.
We've been putting him in this rarefied air with Mahomes, with Josh Allen, with Lamar Jackson as an elite quarterback, and when he's fully healthy, I think there's no argument in terms of his ability, but the problem is the inconsistency when it comes to being available for his team. He's been in the NFL 4 full seasons and had 2 of those years cut short due to injury. At some point, you start to wonder whether or not the Bengals are going to get the return on that investment, because Joe Burrow isn't going to be able to stay healthy enough to perform the way he did in that 2021 season when he took the Bengals to the Super Bowl and he beat Patrick Mahomes head-to-head in the AFC Championship game in order to get there. So I am concerned about the version of Joe Burrow that we're going to see from now until the end of his career, because this wrist injury is something that we don't have a lot of history with quarterbacks being able to bounce back from in the NFL. We just haven't seen it. So I am not going to believe it until I see it. And that's why, sitting here today, I'm selling all the Bengals stock and I'm selling all my Joe Burrow stock.
Man.
You in there with Chris Canty on
I'm
the Joe Burrow field?
I'm not selling it. I like Joe Burrow a lot, but I mean, he's not wrong. I mean,
I agree with him. I've been thinking that for a long time, to be honest, because the Bengals are known for starting off slow. Joe Burrow is always hurt. I feel, to me, he reminds me of like an Eli Manning. Like, if he just get into the playoffs, he's the scariest quarterback there, man. Okay. But in the regular season, it take him a long time to get going, man. Yeah. It was like that last year. And then,
interesting comparison.
Yeah, I was like, at first, you had. I don't know if I see this.
You sold it well. You sold it well, yeah.
I mean, if he get in the playoffs, man, he will scare all the Chiefs fans.
Yeah.
Like, he could just get you there, man. But in the regular season, I don't really see it like that, man.
This is a life comes at you fast kind of thing, isn't it? Like
they didn't pay them, too.
He was all the rage. He got paid, as Figgy just said.
Yeah.
And I'm not selling stock, but I totally buy what Chris Canty is saying.
I hear what he's saying, yeah. And I don't think I'm in a place where I'm selling stock on Joe Burrow. I think I've just seen enough when it comes to his play individually. I've always held my concerns and my skepticisms about the Bengals as an organization.
Of course.
Notoriously cheap. And I thought the moment that I thought maybe they might be turning a corner is when they went and actually built an indoor facility, which they did not have before, right? Indoor practice field. And I was like, all right, maybe they're changing the way they operate, and it does not feel like they're necessarily there. I mean, it seemed like they were making the decision on, hey, we are keeping one of these wide receivers. We're going to pay them. Ja'Marr Chase still ain't gotten his check yet, right? And so I do have concerns on, like, is this going to be – are they going to be able to continue to put a team around him that's sufficient to help the level of talent that he has? But, yeah, so – halfway in, right? I'm not selling the stock on Joe Burrow, but I might be selling my stock on the Bengals.
And the other part of this is players know the reputation that you just outlined. They know that the Bengals are not a great organization when it comes to either money or facilities or just how they operate. And that makes it harder on the franchise quarterback. When you get a franchise quarterback, you spend, what was I saying all offseason, Figgy? You got
smart big money.
You got CJ Stroud. Spend that smart big money because now's the time to do it. And they did.
Some other things around the NFL of note. It's wild. He's not here, but somehow there's still more and more information about number four in Cleveland, Deshaun Watson. Apparently his accuser intends to sit down with an interview with the NFL in 2 weeks. Quote, has pertinent video.
That's what got
to the accusation.
Tony Busby, our guy, Figgy, said he's going to talk with she's going to talk with the NFL in a couple of weeks, and there is, quote, pertinent video.
You don't think that's a little bit strange?
By the way, did you see why it's going to be in 2 weeks?
Why is that?
He's got to do something. He's representing the people that went down in that submarine thing down to the Titanic.
Ah.
And so
he representing them?
Yeah. Or some of them.
I guess like the families of such, or maybe. Yeah. Okay.
He's all over the place,
that guy,
man.
He's everywhere. Yeah. He is everywhere.
I mean, the biggest thing is billable hours, right?
So, yes, sir.
I guess.
This ain't great for Deshaun because it comes down to the contract now.
Yeah. No. I think now that's when the organization. I mean, I don't know, but it could be some slimy things where they say.
Of course there will be.
They maybe try to get out this contract, man.
I think that's exactly what it is.
And we already talked about that. Yeah. What was that, yesterday or a couple days ago? The ideas of, hey, man, the information on the contract, these things are being kind of, I don't want to say leaked, but kind of given in some ways to the media, right? Like, I do think that is kind of indicative in some ways of maybe them trying to test the waters on how would this go over, how would that feel. And so, it's reasonable to assume that maybe, just maybe, they might be trying to get out from under it.
And then it kind of goes to see how is Deshaun as a person in that building.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if he's a little bit awkward in that building, do the teammates really like him and support him like they should? If not, then I could see them trying to get out of that.
Real quick before we go, this note came out yesterday afternoon. If you like the Manning cast, you can do that on Super Bowl Sunday. ESPN will have a Manning cast for the Super Bowl. And so, I mean, just year four of the Manning cast, and I guess it's grown in popularity enough that where ESPN believes having that simulcast of the Super Bowl is going to be worthwhile for them. Does that seem like something that you would do on Super Bowl Sunday itself, have the Manning cast on?
No. And you guys know how much I like, and I've always liked Peyton Manning. I just think the world of him. You guys know how much I watch the Manning cast? I ain't watching the Manning cast on Super Sunday. That's just, that doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
Right. I'm used to, like, you know, the game, the aura around it, the pageantry, the halftime.
The commercials.
I don't think this is the best decision.
I'm very interested to see how, because it just doesn't feel like the type of broadcast that you watch with a group of people, and it feels like more people than not watch the Super Bowl with a group of party people at a party, all that type of stuff. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how useful and how successful it ends up being. But you will get it if you like that. So, there you go. That's around the NFL. on this Thursday in the Loop, Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get into what's popping. And I do actually, we have more information from the Astros as they're gearing up for a 110 first pitch against the A's. We'll give you that. And also, all that news plus more. We'll do it next.
The biggest stories in sports and entertainment. Sports Radio 610 style. In the Loop presents What's Poppin'.
All right, let's get into what's popping on this Thursday in H-Town. It's In the Loop. John Lopez, Figgy Fig, myself, Reginald Datatula. Appreciate you hanging out with us. Hey, man, we got some news.
We do have some news.
Like, this is, I'm not breaking, that's wild. But, I mean, it's very...
Good, solid update.
Very good update. Or a very important update. I'm interested on how you feel on whether it's good or not. But as we're getting ready, gearing up for, the start of this... Game three, as the Astros try and avoid a sweep against the Oakland A's at their own building, right?
Like there is that.
It feels like a wild thing to say, but we definitely needed some update and some news. Altuve left the game yesterday with I want to call it a strain. I was like, I don't know exactly what to call it. Just some discomfort on the right side of his body.
Yeah, and we've seen these before. It sounded like a rib cage thing, like a muscle or something. Again, nobody's told me a damn thing. This is just... pure speculation.
After a singular swing, he stops, walks out of the box, calls over from the... Yeah, he bunts on a two-strike bunt.
Yeah.
because it seemed like he just was unwilling to swing the bat again with the way that it felt. Like, he knew instantly. This wasn't a...
Yeah.
It's starting to feel like it and maybe... He steps out of the batter's box in the middle of an AB and gestures to the dugout like, hey, man, something is wrong. And so that definitely was a cause for concern. After the game, he basically was like, I don't want to, like, you know, be too hasty to say that there's something wrong. We'll see how he feels in the morning. Well, it seems like we've gotten a little bit of insight onto how he feels. We have this, Fig. This is Joe Espada. Although, mind you, I don't think he's spoken to the trainer.
But for what it's worth.
For what it is worth. I don't know that he's spoken to the trainer, but this is his update on Altuve.
He's doing better. I thought he was going to come in and be more sore, you know, especially after the way he looked yesterday. But he's day-to-day. He's in the weight room. He's throwing the Met ball around, trying to get the area loose. So hopefully, you know, it's something that he won't miss a lot of time.
He's missing today, but that was expected. Even if he wasn't hurt, you know.
Night game to day game feels like a quick turnaround for dudes who felt something like that.
Yeah, and especially, like I said, even if he weren't hurt, it might have been the same. But still, again, you got to say for what it's worth. But maybe I just get sucked into this way too often. I feel like Altuve might be sooner rather than later. Maybe it's a gut feeling. Maybe I'm just a sucker because, you know, we all know how much they lie about this stuff. But I feel like this one he might be okay.
That's the update on Altuve. We'll see how that goes. Sooner rather than later is basically what you're going with here, and that's the general idea that Espada's putting down. All right, let's hear from Espada when it comes to the plan for Kyle Tucker, as he's been DHing and he'll DH again today. What's the plan on maybe getting him back in the field? Oh, my bad, Fig.
Hopefully he could be in there tomorrow, but in the outfield. So that work right there looked really good. So the goal is to have him in right field tomorrow.
We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, that wasn't like super goal, confident. That wasn't
the goal
guaranteed.
Is, well, we all got a lot of goals. I mean, we got goals everywhere. The goal is to have him in there. Now they have said that, recently as well. This isn't the first time he said that, but this is one where you're like, okay. And as long as he's swinging the bat and not just awful, you know, I don't care. But it does affect who's playing DH and who's in the field and how many at bats you can get certain players.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the all things as well is if they feel like he are fairly confident that he can get into the field pretty quick, I think that speaks to maybe his general health and how well he is moving, because you're not putting someone in right field if you don't feel like they can move a little bit, which I know has
been a little
bit
of concern. And he will have to move a lot. Yeah.
Speaking of Anaheim, we have the probables for Anaheim. Yusei Kikuchi, Verlander, Ronel Blanco.
All right.
Set to make a start on Sunday against the Angels. So there you go. That's your Astros information. Some other things that are worth noting. And you wanted to get to this in some ways. Yesterday was September 11th. I don't think we really made note of it on the program.
Yeah, probably should have.
I was like, I don't know how
we
exactly
a real good
I wanted
spot
to.
That we did, yeah.
But with that being the case, like, if you do make mention of it, you would think that it would be in one of reverence, one that's respectful. And it seems like maybe sometimes you're not actually going to do that as we've gotten further and further away from the date itself.
All right. So I have to qualify everything I'm about to say. What we're going to read here is absolutely awful. It's insensitive. It's mean. It's tone deaf. It's all that.
So it's social media then?
Yeah. So we're going to social media if you haven't figured it out already. But I remember, I'm sure you guys remember, when 9/11 happened, obviously, you know, we know the, just, you know, how awful that tragedy was. But I remember there was a real tone of, this is one of those events that we will never, ever, ever see any comedian or anyone, you know, sort of attempt any kind of humor. Like, it was that atrocious,
but,
right?
But time changes things, man.
Well, who figured that 9/11 would become a punchline by Carolina Panthers fans? I mean, I read this. I said, is this real? So the Carolina Panthers posted a 9/11 remembrance on Instagram yesterday. The comments, Figgy, made me kind of sick to my stomach, but it also made me think about that. Well, I guess there is a moment, you know, when people can start trying to attempt humor. I'm going to read these, and they're not me. I want to say that again.
Uh-oh. Yeah, but you're going to put it in your voice, huh?
I'm going to put it in my voice.
Yeah, man.
Y'all blame me. These were Carolina Panthers fans responding to a very humble, I am on an island, a very humble and very sincere post by the Carolina Panthers. This is the comments, some of the comments. Saddam Hussein would be a better defensive coordinator.
Yikes. That person, by the way, has their name on their account.
Yes, they do. Our 9/11 is every Sunday.
Yikes.
This is just awful.
Although, like, that format of, I guess, quote-unquote joke has been going around, the idea of this is my personal 9/11 or what have you. People have been saying that.
Never forget, 10 to 47.
Yikes.
I will never forget when we were a good team. I mean, this is just awful, man. We just heard Andy Kalu. You got to remember, it's a game, man. And they went there?
They in a tough spot, man.
They went there?
Yeah. Look,
I felt like a couple years ago, we was in a tough spot.
We weren't
too.
Doing this.
I mean, is that just the morbid dark humor that happened?
I will say this. It was a time where the Houston Texans profile or their Twitter or anything account.
Oh, they had to turn
it
off.
They could post Happy Easter.
Yeah.
And you hear, Easter, fire Easter on Easter.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't care, but they ain't take it that far.
But we didn't go here. I was just appalled, and then I was like, I guess.
To me, that just show you how bad of a place they in, man.
Oh, my God.
When they can't even post anything without fans just going in on them, man. That's a bad look.
Very cynical. Very cynical place.
It was a 9/11, remember?
That is correct.
The team is bad. That's more important, John.
Well, I guess to some people. My goodness.
All right. something that is decidedly not 9/11 related. This news I found to be somewhat interesting. The SEC has installed availability reports for this season. I mean, this is a lot like what we see and what we've gotten used to in the NFL. And I view it as another step towards us finding that subsection of college football that will fully embrace professionalism.
Oh, sure. Not only that, but I mean, it's also a reflection of just how much money is bet on the SEC. And how much pressure, you know, the SEC commissioner and athletic directors and everybody are getting from gamblers. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I don't think it's a stretch to say there's the NFL. And in college football, the number one league bet on is the SEC.
Yeah, SEC and probably the Big Ten, depending on.
Right.
I think those two are the leagues that are going to try and vie for the opportunity to be kind of a secondary professional league. As much as college sports has already been professionalized, they're really going to lean into that fullness. But yeah, this is obviously a betting a move that is based on betting, which I think is kind of real nasty when you think about the idea. We have been sold for literal decades the idea that this is about the competition,
student athletes.
Man, this is about making sure that this money is here now.
Yeah.
Is explicitly so by making sure that the gamblers have the information necessary to make their bets.
The other thing I love about this, college football coaches are the worst. Like, you think, you know, like, there is nobody alive that has more power trips and control and, you know, the dictatorships.
It's a very authoritative, authoritative position.
And they want to control everything. And I'm just sort of...
Now you got
to
tell us who's hurting on a Thursday.
Yeah, I'm just kind of laughing inside, man. These guys, like, can you imagine Nick Saban, you know, when this was going on?
That's why he left. That's why he left. He saw availability reports coming. He was like, over my dead body.
How about, like, Mike Gundy and the, you know, if he were in the SEC or something like that? Like,
although Mike Gundy apparently out here giving us that reel.
Yeah.
He was asked about a player that that they were able to get a hold of. His name is Obi Ezeigbo, who is a transfer from Division II Gannon University. Let me know if you know where that is, because I don't. And he asked the media, "Do you want the real answer or do you want the coach speak?" And then he gave them this quote: "He was very inexpensive. The number of players we go after that are ready to play at this level, we can't afford. So he was a good buy and a really quality young man that had success and has physical characteristics that we can work with and develop. So that's why he ended up here, in my opinion."
Good for Division II and lower division school players. That's going to be a lot of that.
Never thought I'd find myself in a place where I appreciated what came out of Mike Gundy's mouth. But yeah. Look, that's the real now. Again, another instance where we are getting to the place where they are being fully transparent with the professionalism of this. He was "Hey, man, we couldn't afford them other ones.
Yeah.
So we got a dude who could play at this level that was cheap.
And it helps them, too. It helps the players, too. So it's always good.
Yeah. I always felt like if you're a college coach and you're real, it gave you a good opportunity. Look, Coach Calipari, mm-hmm. right? Like in Kentucky, he got so many of those dudes because he was like, "Look, man, what we're trying to do, we're trying to win, but we're trying to put you in the lead." So there you go. That's what's popping here on a Thursday in the Loop, Sports Radio 610. Coming up next on In the Loop, what challenge does this Bears defense pose? We got answers on that from both D'Amico Ryans and CJ Stroud. So in the Texans' words, what challenge does this defense pose? We'll talk about it next.